You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
What will the coming decade bring? Well, we're going to be asking eight all-stars that question, starting right now with Jared Taylor, the editor of American Renaissance and the author of many books, including White Identity, Racial Consciousness in the 21st Century. Jared has graciously agreed to join us this evening, even as he is at a dinner party. He has stepped away from the table just for a couple of minutes, and we thank him for that. Jared, how are you? And Happy New Year.
Oh, I'm very well. Delighted to be on your program. Happy New Year to you and all of your wonderful patriotic listeners.
Ah, well, fantastic. Well, thank you for saying that. And I know that you and I were both on the Red Ice Christmas stream a few days ago, and we were two of the more optimistic and forward-looking glass-half-full type of guys. Yeah. Are you buying or selling, Jared, on our cause and our people going into the next 10-year period?
I'm buying. I'm optimistic. I really think, well, this is going to be a decisive decade. If things don't turn our way at some point during this decade, then it's probably going to be too late. But I'm confident they will. And I believe, first of all, that in Eastern Europe, the Europeans there will consolidate their nationalism in a pretty permanent way. I just don't see the Hungarians and the Poles going multi-culti. I think they're pretty solid. And in Western Europe, you see all these nationalist parties moving ahead. It's really in the English-speaking world where we're way behind. America, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, United Kingdom. But I see signs of hope there, too. So I'm optimistic. But I've been doing this for 30 years, so I've been coming through dark, dark times, and I see light, game.
Well, this is what I want to ask you as a perfect follow-up to that. Looking at this in 10-year trends,
yeah.
When you ask people to say, how's it going to turn out over the course of the next year, the next decade, I don't even know if anybody, if we'd have had this show last week, if anybody could have foreseen Trump doing what he did a few days ago in Iran. But in any case, you almost set yourself up to not get it right. But generally speaking, we could be pretty close to target. Looking back on the last 10 years, Jared, you say that we're in better shape now than we have been in a long, long time, and you give some reasons for that.
Well, look at just the number of wide-awake people that we know about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I mean, I could practically count on my fingers and toes the number of people who were outspoken in what they were up to, their understanding of the demographic quality of our civilization, the fact that it is tied to our people and our race. But now, just the number of websites and people making great content, the meetings people are having, the numbers have grown. And, of course, the reason why the other side is so diligent about shutting us down is because we're persuasive. We're successful. We have answers to the problems that plague the country. And, yes, we're going to have problems being deplatformed. Our money sources are being it's hard to get money to us in some cases. But, no, it's out of the bag. The cat is out of the bag. You can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. There's just too many people who know. And they're going to try, and they're getting more and more desperate. And every orthodoxy lashes out with particular viciousness as it dies. And I think that's the phenomenon we're seeing now.
That's a great way to put it. We need you to be well-fed, so we're going to let you get back to dinner. But I want to ask you one more thing before you fly.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you again for kind of leading the procession here tonight with what we've got planned for our audience. 10 years from now, any battle, always going to be setbacks. There's going to be advancements. There's going to be victories. There's going to be defeats. It's not going to be all one or all of the other. But 10 years from now, are we better than we are right now? Will we have significant breakthroughs? Those still remain to be seen what they possibly could be. We won't predict. Are we going to be better off in 10 years than we are tonight?
What I predict is this. The country will continue to become more non-white. And in that respect, it will be a constant setback. But there will be, I believe, enough white people to stand up for our rights and who have a good and long-term sense of our interests so that we are part of the conversation in such an important way that we cannot be ignored. That's my prediction. It'd be hard to stop the demographic trends, but equally, it'd be very, very hard to stop the trend towards racial consciousness of white people. Now, will that always end up in just civil political discussion? I hope so. But these are two major forces that are building to a head. And as I said before, this is going to be a decisive decade, and I remain optimistic.
Well, Jared, I think you're right. There'll be some people on tonight that are going to point to, I think Ramsey Paul is going to point to the fact that there's going to be more hate crime legislation. There's going to be more thought suppression, but we will overcome. And Amren.com is a place where you can be a part of the solution, folks. Jared, 30-second answer on this one. Our producer, Sam, our good friend, wanted me to ask you. You are, of course, a son of Virginia, and Godspeed and God bless you for that. But what's going on in Virginia? Looks like there's a little powder keg over there on the Second Amendment, and some of the good people in Virginia are starting to flex some muscles.
Well, that's right. When the State House flipped Democrat, the Democrats, with Ralph Northam leading the charge, they have promised all kinds of anti-Second Amendment legislation. But as you probably already discussed on your show, the huge majority of the counties in the state have declared themselves Second Amendment counties. And they've said, look, we don't care what kind of laws the state passes. We're not going to enforce them. Now, the lawyers that speak for the state say, well, it doesn't make any difference if you don't want to enforce them. We'll enforce them. I can imagine a situation which maybe the state police start trying to confiscate AR-15s or magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, this sort of thing. And the local police and the local folks say, nope, you just ain't going to do it. It may end up in the courts, but I think there are lots and lots of people for whom this is the last straw. And I increasingly feel the same way myself. So there's real resistance, absolute resistance. Just today, in fact, I attended a meeting of the county, of the Fairfax County Council, and the place, an auditorium of probably about, I guess there were 400 people. It was packed with people wearing bright orange tags that said, guns save lives. And there was a discussion about some of this stuff, and the entire audience was absolutely stalwart. We booed, we cheered. There was a real expression of absolute no, nada más, no more on this foolishness. So we're really buckling down for a fight.
I'll tell you what, if it gets hot, we'll be calling you General Taylor one day. We'll see how it goes. But it's always good to see. And here it is again in Virginia, no less. And, well, that's the way it should be. God bless you, Jared. Get back to dinner. We'll talk to you soon. And we'll be following up. I know there's a big big rally coming up in Virginia on January 20th. We'll be watching that with great interest.
Great. Well, thanks so much. And God bless you and a wonderful new year and a wonderful new decade for you and your program. And, as I say, all of your wonderful listeners.
We'll talk to you again soon, brother. Take care. All right, so that was Jared Taylor up there in the middle of where the action is, or where the action very well could be very soon. And there's the music. So we'll be back. Keith's still with us. He's going to be with us the rest of the program. We got Paul Ramsey Paul, as it were, coming up. And he's going to break down a recent 30-minute YouTube video that he did on predictions for 2020. Wouldn't you know it? We'll be right back with Paul.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
From Jared Taylor to Ramsey Paul we go as our parade of guests continues as we look ahead to the 2020s. We want to give a quick shout-out to our stalwart listeners in Missouri who wrote earlier, we finally bought a Bluetooth speaker and can play the show now with great sound. Well, I hope we sound better tonight, and thank you for listening. Ramsey Paul, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing okay. I'm fighting a head cold, but I'll make it through this. So,
soldiering on, even with the head cold, doing radio, doing the Lord's work, Ramsey Paul. And you did a great video, 30-minute YouTube video with your own predictions. Break it down in just a couple of minutes, if you can. What do you see? What portends? What is to come the next 10 years? I know you were talking.
Oh, Nostradamus.
Yeah, right. Well, he had the oracle there. The little gypsy was his graphic, looking into a crystal ball. I know you think we're going to have, it can't all be good news. Jared and I were a little more upbeat, but probably going to see some tightening of the nooses with regard to hate crime legislation. Am I right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty rough decade, but again, I'm optimistic long-term, and if you're a Christian, we look forward to ultimate victory. But I think this decade is going to be very difficult. A couple of things. I have my doubts that Trump will win just because of demographic changes, and I know the Democratic candidates are horrible, but when you look at demographics, people tend to vote based on the identity, not so much on position. So I'm skeptical if Trump will win. And I see an economic crisis through this decade. I think we're living off our past riches in America, and everything's gone crazy with the debt. And I know I've heard that forever, but I would think that eventually it has to break, especially if the Democrats get in. And I think they literally want everyone in the world, if they want to come to America, end our borders. And not only that, if you come here, you get free health care, free education, free everything. Eventually, something will have to break on that end. So I see potentially very difficult times economically, and that's going to create a lot of turmoil.
Paul, this is Keith Alexander. How are you doing, sir? I wanted to ask you this. We have hate crime legislation. We're talking about the Shannon, the Knoxville horror situation, and the fact that those perpetrators, they've been prosecuted, but they've never been prosecuted, as far as I know, for a hate crime. And it's just like the Civil Rights Act of 64, which bans racial discrimination, but the only people that are ever prosecuted under that are white Gentiles. Same thing for hate crimes. Are we going to get identity politics for white people in the next decade? Is it going to be something that basically they can't poo-poo and forget? We're going to get together and really have identity politics? Or when all is said and done, will more be said than done in the next decade?
Yeah, I do think we will get identity politics with whites, although I don't think it's going to be like a 100% pure racial whiteness or anything like that. I think a lot of Hispanics and even Asians will be part of that coalition that's basically the Heritage America. So I don't see a purely racial, but I do see identity politics coming in. I think we already do. And hate crimes, that's a horrible concept. It's a political concept and it should not even exist. Because really what it's doing is trying to read your mind and your feelings. And all we had historically is if you commit murder, I don't really care if it's because of racial reasons or because of greed or whatever, it's horrible. You should pay a very severe penalty. And you're right. Once you start having this idea of so-called hate crimes, it gets expanded to everything. And the whole idea of hate speech, it used to be hate speech was, oh, if you just say really nasty things about another ethnic group, which, you know, I don't think you should do, but I think it should be illegal, but that's hate speech. But now, I don't know if you saw, these people, they have this saying that it's okay to be white. Not that it's superior to be white, not that other groups are bad, but hey, if you're white, it's okay. You don't have to be ashamed of it. That's your identity, no big deal. That's considered now hate speech. So you're right. It's how they're using the term hate speech is similar to how the Soviets used the term counter-revolutionary speech. It's sort of meaningless. It's just whatever the elite is opposed to, they'll call it hate speech. So if you think immigration should be reduced, oh, that's hate speech. You have hate in your heart. So it's a very dangerous concept. It's not an American concept. And I think the whole idea of hate speech should be just thrown out, just judge people based on if they break regular crimes. So if you assault someone, that's a crime. If you kill someone, that's a crime.
Well, you know how the hate crime law came about. It came before Congress 43 times and was voted down 43 times. But like the devil, the left is never discouraged and never sleeps, and they got it passed on the 44th try. This is the relentlessness of our enemies and the fact that they find to be a red flag to say it's okay to be white. That just gives fuel to the fire of the people that are saying that basically their end game is white genocide. If it's not okay to be white, then what's going to happen to white people? This is what they're trying to do, and I think it's time for people to wake up. And identity politics, if we don't get it, we're like the Indians, and we're being told that we have to fight with bows and arrows when our enemies are using machine guns.
Well, Paul, you touched on something earlier that I want to circle back to, and I think you're very, very right. Just because we are optimistic about our long-term prospects, it doesn't mean to say that things might not get worse in the near-term future, even over the course of the next decade. None of us know how the future is going to turn out. I mean, obviously, we all know that to be true. We could have significant breakthroughs over the course of the next 10 years, or it could get much darker over the course of the next 10 years. We could be like the people who lived under the Moore occupation. I mean, it could be decades before we're delivered. Mm-hmm. So we need to keep that in mind, but ultimately I do think we will prevail. I think that so much. I just don't think, I say it often, the absurdities of liberalism have gone beyond anything anybody could have reasonably thought. It's like Keith said. I mean, now they're just seeing what they can get away with some of the things that we're told to take seriously with regard to the number of genders and transgender, you know, all of this stuff.
And gender-changing surgery for prepubescent children.
It's just the gravity, the weight of it all is just going to crush this eventually at some point. But how do we remain hopeful even when it seems as though we're isolated and things are going against us in the near term, Paul?
Well, I mean, if you're a Christian, we always have hope, and so we always got to keep that in mind. But we can also look at history, and I think you're very observant there, made a good point. It reminds me a little bit of almost like the French Revolution. They went through a reign of terror, and the mob just went crazy, beheading people and killing and all sorts of perverted things. And then eventually there was a reaction against that. And even with the Soviet Bolshevik Revolution, they did horrible things. But that was the situation that took a long time before it finally crumbled.
Are we at Thermidor yet, Paul?
You know, we just have to do our duty and stand fast. And I think I really like to be optimistic, and I think that's great to be. But we got to be realistic and not think that everything's going to be a bed of roses and everything's going to be easy and we're, you know, Trump's going to win again and everything's going to roll back. I don't know. I think we have some difficult times ahead of us. And if we have that attitude, then if it is easier, and God, I wish that, I pray for that, then great. But if it isn't, then we're kind of prepared. So I think people should really prepare. And by prepare, I don't mean stockpiling guns or anything like that. I mean getting your family in order, getting your friendships, getting your health in order. And I think that's what we need to do as a people.
It's a Chinese curse, Paul. What is it? May you live in interesting times. I have the feeling the next decade will be interesting times.
Well, Paul Ramsey Paul has a 30-minute video that you can find. You can go to his YouTube, at Ramsey Paul. We're going to repost it to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, in the next couple of days. 30 minutes of his predictions and foresight and all of that good stuff. So if you didn't get enough Ramsey Paul in this segment, check out that YouTube video and support his work and all that good stuff. Paul, Happy New Year. Always good to have you on the show. Look forward to having you back soon.
Bye-bye.
Ramsey Paul, everybody. Jason Kuna up next.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
At least one missile landed near the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. No casualties have been reported in the strike, which hit after thousands gathered for a funeral procession to mourn slain Iranian General Qasem Soleimani. Multiple sources reported on the strike, but the number of missiles that have landed was not confirmed. An unknown number of rockets landed in the heavily fortified Green Zone, where the U.S. Embassy is situated, but it was not hit. President Trump tweeted, he's selected 52 targets in Iran that will be hit very hard and very fast if there are strikes against Americans or American assets. Soleimani was killed Thursday in what President Trump said was a defensive measure to prevent imminent and sinister attacks. Iran's ambassador to the UN said the U.S. has started a military war by an act of terror with the killing of Soleimani. This is USA Radio News.
If you're thinking about life insurance from low-cost term to business or estate coverage or perhaps a small policy to cover your final expenses, why spend more than you have to? Hi, I'm John David Wells from the Wells Report. Since 1986, AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of folks save a fortune on their life insurance by quickly comparing the rates, features, and financial strength of dozens of top-rated life insurance products right over the phone. Want some examples? A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy a $500,000 10-year level term policy for less than $45 a month. Oh, you say you're 60? No problem. Under $120 a month. 20 or 30 year terms, even permanent plans are available. Okay, so you might have some health problems, huh? Lots of us do, but the experts at AccuQuote will still work with you to find the best affordable policy. To find out how much you can save, call AccuQuote today, 877-439-8830. That's 877-439-8830. 877-439-8830. AccuQuote. Call them today.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
As the death toll continues to rise, at least 3,000 Australian troops have been deployed to help tackle the brush fires in the country. USA's John Clemens reports.
Strong winds coupled with readings of 104 degrees prompted officials to declare a very dangerous time ahead for southeast Australia. Gladys Berejiklian is the Premier of New South Wales.
The day's unfolding so far as we anticipate. There are unfortunately 137 fires and bush and grass fires burning across the state. Around 60 of them are uncontained, and those areas of concern that we had yesterday and the previous days remain at that very concerning level.
Since September, fires in Australia have claimed at least 23 lives, with dozens of people listed as missing. At least 1,500 homes have been lost in the brush fires so far this season. I'm John Clemens.
More than 15 million acres have been burned and over 1,000 homes have been destroyed. You're listening to USA Radio News.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
You've heard from Jared Taylor, Ramsey Paul, to Jason Kuna we go. Jason, of course, is the author of Born Guilty, among other titles, and the host of the popular YouTube show The After Party. And Jason, the question is, what will the 2020s bring?
Well, it's going to be amazing. I tell you, that's a big Happy New Year to you, your family. Happy New Decade to all of your wonderful audience, all of the heroes out there serving white well-being. Hello to you all. It's going to be an amazing year. It's going to be an absolutely phenomenal decade. I see that there's going to be some stark dichotomies. This is how I'm seeing it. Don't look for our victory in a diminution of anti-white power. I see it as two storms on the horizon. There's one of light, one of darkness. We are going to grow in strength. Those of us serving white well-being, as well as the anti-white, they're going to continue to grow. Too long we have observed or looked for victory in the diminution or the breaking back or the tearing down of what the anti-whites have done. We're not going to see victory there. The anti-whites have achieved power in all the nerve centers in which they need to hold power to continue this train and to take it to its collision course. So we're going to see the train run this course. So we are going to grow simultaneously. It's going to be a parallel growth, and they will get stronger as we will get stronger. So the censorship will grow, and we will become more wily. We will reach more people, and they will apply more hate speech laws and whatever else they want to call heretic laws. That's what I see happening when it comes to the anti-white, generally speaking, and us, generally speaking. Societally, we're going to see an enormous, I think, potential here for a context shift, which is what we need to have happen over the next decade. Because in this context, for all the planning that our brightest people do, folks a lot brighter than me, there's no way to plan out of this context. And yet, for all of that intelligence, they continue to focus on the context and the possibility and lack thereof, given the context. What will happen over the course of the next decade? We hope to be able to put our shoulder into this context and be a part of making societal context into something where there will be more options for us, that we will be in a greater position because of greater numbers coming to our cause and the message that we're bringing to them that is empowering them, that we will be able to take advantage of new opportunities that will present themselves to us at that time, opportunities that right now we can't even imagine. So all of these plans about voting here or silly violence there or whatever these plans are, they're all going to be moot because in the new context, it's not going to matter. Now, remember, the context can be shifted by a lot of things. It's going to be shifted by things like wars around the world over the next 10 years, but it's also going to be shifted by something that we talk about called the event horizon. And we are nearing this event horizon for the anti-white. That is where the average anti-white person, given any group that they are a member of, stops looking at the white race as the race that they have to overcome for their people's enrichment and therefore their enrichment. Hard for white people to understand because we don't think that way. But non-white people, God bless them, they see their individual well-being by way of their group's well-being. And so once they begin to see that the white race is not the problem for their group's well-being and enrichment and therefore their individual well-being and enrichment, they are going to begin turning on each other in greater numbers. What appears to be this monolithic coalition of anti-white, of all races against Western kind, that will begin to break down. We will see it for what it really is, which is individual groups that are enriching themselves at our expense as a people and therefore as our expense as an individual. So I see the event horizon approaching. It may hit in the next 10 years, but it's going to be close if it doesn't. Politically, there are other options, too. I mean, we're going to see, I think, the Republican Party is going to become something that is wholly anti-white, openly anti-white, as anti-white as the Democrats are today. The Democrats are going to become wholly socialist, anti-white. There potentially going to be a lot of things in the political sphere that are going to be shaking things up. But it's going to be a raucous decade, and it is going to be the decade that we are going to decide by our efforts to make it the roaring 20s, and we will recapture our destiny this decade, because if we don't, there may not be another option.
Jason, this is Keith Alexander. Good to talk with you. Let me ask you this. Is this going to be the decade where white identity politics comes to the fore, or are we, like you were suggesting, basically our enemies are going to start fighting among themselves? Or I see a third option. There might be an awakening by non-whites that their real adversaries, everything they've been blaming white Gentiles for, is actually being foisted on them by Jewish power and influence, and they will become the enemy. But how do you see this thing playing out over the next 10 years? Is it going to be the more things change, the more they stay the same, or are we going to have identity politics, or are we going to start really gaining political power through some other means?
There won't be political power gain over the next 10 years by us. There's going to be a radical shift for our people socio-politically, psychologically, artistically, and we're going to begin moving toward the creation, once again, of a people out of this deracinated white race. That is going to be where the power increases for us. The anti-whites are also going to increase in power. Politically, they'll knock down what's left of the bulwarks that our ancestors have put up against such criminality and corruption. And this runaway train that they have created will continue to pick up speed. They will put more coal to the fire, to the burners, and it will come closer and closer to running off of the rails. So the power is going to seem to be, and this is exactly what I'm saying, it's not going to appear that there is a diminution of anti-white power, and that as the sign of our victory. Now, the sign of our victory is going to be we're going to go from so many millions of white people looking to the alma mater, looking to the government, looking to the news and entertainment, looking to their churches as their source of leadership, to looking to organizational entities like the ones that we have here, looking back to our people, looking back to our history, looking to what we can offer them next. That's where the real power is going to come from. It is not going to look like what's come before whatsoever. If there is an analogy, it's going to be what happened in the Soviet Union, where the Russian people knew that communism was a farce, but if you said it out loud, you got decapitated for it. There, more and more white people are going to come to us, they're going to come to white well-being, and they're going to say, enough is enough, and we're going to resist it. Initially, they're not going to be able to say it out loud, but we will know each other, we will know by our growing numbers, and we will also know that the anti-whites know by their increasing level of censorship, because with all of their means of monitoring what we are doing, thinking, acting, speaking, et cetera, they see the writing on the wall, and they're already talking about the growing awareness of white identity.
Well, Jason, you said that the bulwarks were falling, that we're protecting white people, or at least white people assume they were. That process is going on right before our eyes now in Virginia regarding the Second Amendment. What do you think?
Yes, sir. Well, it is indeed. I don't think, I live here in Fairfax County, right outside Washington, D.C., Fairfax, Virginia. And I see things a little bit different than what others are saying when it comes to what's happening here. I don't see the Democrat. Well, I see, let's put it this way. The anti-whites, those are the Democrats here in Virginia. They would like to, given their religious fanaticism, they would like to move against the population swiftly, take our right of self-defense away. And of course, in a world where there's such a thing as a firearm, if you are deprived of a firearm, you do not have the right to self-defense. They would like to do that. They might even like to talk about sending National Guard or sheriffs or the state police to take weapons away. But I think what will probably happen is anti-white, who are the anti-white elites, wealthier ones, they might come in behind the scenes and say, look, don't do any of this violence because there's no need. Just send these people bills. And then when they don't pay the bills, garnish their wages. And then what will happen is people will just begin moving out of the state. I don't see any sort of armed conflict in God. I hope there's nothing like that. We want a peaceful resolution of all of our disagreements. And we know that the anti-whites, given their proclivity to violence, are at the moment inclined to make such braggadocious claims as forced registration, forced confiscation, et cetera. but I don't just see that happening just yet.
Well, they're grabbing on to their to the left-wing idea of sanctuary counties now, where they're going to say, we don't care what they do in Richmond, they ain't doing it here.
Well, you know, there's supposed to be a big rally on the 20th, Jason, and we may very well follow up with you if you keep your ear to the ground, as I know you will, and you can give us a firsthand accounting of what's taking place there in Virginia. But come what may, this year and this decade, I know you'll be there on the front lines. You are a prolific content creator and one of our most capable and effective spokesmen, and it's always great to talk to you, Jason. Give folks your contact information because we're just about out of time.
NoWhiteGuilt.org, TheAfterParty.tv, NoWhiteGuilt on YouTube. You can find me there. Find everything you need.
Jason Kuna, everybody, one of the best and one of the people we absolutely positively wanted to make sure we had on this first show of the year. Jason, we salute you. We'll talk to you again soon, brother. Tom Kaczynski up next.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRite, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRite makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRite today from Google Play or the App Store.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
When we started thinking about this first show of the year, I wanted it to have just the right presentation. And so we looked through a lot of our regular guests, and we started to plug and play with guests that would have interesting takes and be able to cover different topics still fitting within this overall theme of what we see in the coming year and the coming decade, as it is our first show of 2020. So we picked Jared Taylor, Paul Ramsey, Jason Kuna, Brad Griffin, and then to give a sort of focused perspective, Michael Hill, The Future of the South, Paul Fromm, an international perspective, and then Brett McAtee, Pastor Brett, with a perspective on the faith and what lies over the, for our faith over the course of the next 10 years. But another guest we wanted to be sure to have on tonight with a great deal of certainty is Tom Kaczynski. And Tom is the former town manager of Jackman, Maine, the author of several books, and the regent of New Albion. We'll talk a little bit more about that this segment as well. Tom, welcome back. Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me on, James. I really appreciate it.
Always fun when you come on. And since you were a town manager, which for those of us in the rest of the country outside of Jackman, that's what we would call our mayor, folks. So you've had a bit of political authority. I want to talk to you about electoral politics. We ran a poll on my Twitter account asking people if the election were held today, would you vote for Trump, someone else in the field, or would you set it out? Now, if we'd asked this question the first week of January 2016, I think it would have been 95% Trump. The results, and keep in mind, this was a few days ago before he launched this latest misadventure in Iran. 56% would vote to reelect the president. 10% would vote for someone of the field. 33% would set it out. What's that tell you, Tom?
Well, it tells me that Trump is having a problem keeping his core base happy and that he is tacked way too far to the center too quickly. But unfortunately, he'll probably get away with it because the reality is the Democratic field has so many weak candidates. I mean, if we were going to be really honest, we got Creepy Joe. We got, you know, Pocahontas the Shrew, right? We got Joe Biden, who, you know, I said Creepy Joe.
Sleepy Joe.
We got old Bernie, you know, who represents sort of crazy wacko progressive type, and Mayor Pete, for whom I will not use the epithet which I would use in private. So any of these choices are not going to be ones that appeal to the mainstream, and the Democrats literally have created a circular firing squad with four weak candidates. So it's Trump's election to lose, in my opinion, and if the economy doesn't collapse between now and then, which it may, but I don't think it will, he probably will win. But
well, you know, Pat Buchanan, Tom, this is Keith Alexander. I'm on
hey, Keith,
with James. Fine. Pat Buchanan wrote an article recently saying that starting a war may be just the magic elixir that might cause Trump to lose the election. I guess a war like that could have economic ramifications as well. So people are thinking in that line, and why in the world, you know, this is happening, I don't know, but it seems like a totally self-inflicted wound by Trump. He ran on the idea of keeping us out of Middle Eastern wars, and now he's ready to jump right in the middle of a new one.
Well, and then, as it was pointed out, they assassinated a guy that they said was their ally in fighting ISIS in Iraq, you know, some years ago. I guess that's a memory hold. But, no, this actually, Keith, leads me to the next question I had for Tom. So this is it. So, yes, you're right, because the Democrats have gone so far to the left, they have given Trump, and this impeachment charade, we mentioned this earlier, we've been mentioning it for weeks, this all helps him be reelected, even though he's done nothing to stem the third world demographic onslaught, and even though he's done really nothing to secure the border, and this war thing could, you know, throw a wrench into it all, but it's certainly interesting. But whether or not he skates by and gets reelected, we're looking to the future of the decade. What is the future, in your opinion, Tom, for Republican and Democratic politics, not just in 2020, but in 2024, 2028?
Right. It's a great question. And so first thing that has me concerned is the redistricting from the 2020 census. And I'm just going to answer you on a pure electoral demographic level in the interest of time. What we're going to see is that Republican states are going to lose votes and Democrat states are going to gain them, which is to say that states where a whole bunch of immigrants are coming into are going to gain more electoral votes, more congressional seats. That means the Democrats will have an advantage in the House. And I am predicting that in 2024, we see the states of Arizona, Florida, and Texas all jump over to the Democrat side. and that that is the end of politics in America as we know it, because if and when the Democrats get control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, or close enough between the House and the presidency, they will amnesty somewhere between a quarter to the full amount of people who are here illegally. Add then 5 to 20 million new voters. The Republicans, for fear of being called not sufficiently enamored with diversity, will approve it. And I'm thinking 2024, we'll see Trump win in 2022. The House lost in, or excuse me, Trump wins in 2020. The House is lost in 2022. And in 2024, the Republican Party gives this new Midwest-centered Republican Party that's moving northward because of demography. They'll give us someone like Nikki Haley with Marco Rubio in the neocon retread team with a tick that only a donor and an AIPAC member could appreciate. And I think they lose then, you know, and then I think it's over. And I think at that point.
And then they lose forever. They lose forever. They're going to be the Washington Generals or the Harlem Globetrotters every year after that, unless something drastic happens. And Trump had the opportunity to make something drastic happen, and he didn't.
Bolsheviks, you know, I think that's what they'll do. They'll go out there, and the Republican Party will exist, but conservatism in any meaningful sense will not.
Well, there's the Republicans are spineless. For example, in Tennessee, we have two Democratic congressmen and we have seven Republicans. But the two that are Democrats, they got in because they gerrymandered districts under the Voting Rights Act to allow minorities to elect somebody. Steve Cohen, the infamous Steve Cohen, is the congressman from Memphis. He could easily be redistricted out by the Republicans, but the Republicans lack the intestinal fortitude to do it. They're afraid they'll be caught.
Hey, wait, I mean, look, I mean, you know, Tom being the one guy who served in a capacity of an official, a town manager, a mayor. I mean, what in the hell are these Republicans thinking, Tom? I mean, you've got, like you mentioned Tennessee, Keith, our governor, Bill Lee, who positioned himself when he was running for the election as the seventh-generation rural Tennessean, and he did come from a rurally populated northwestern Tennessee county, dressed as a Confederate general in college and got pictured for it and all of that. Now he's one of, 16, 17 Republican governors to request more refugee resettlement? I mean,
not to take up the Trump offer to
correct
the refugees out of their states.
Is there anything that they won't do that the globalists asked them to do?
Well, you know, the simplest answer to that is look who controls the money. I mean, frankly, I think that the real answer to this at both the state governor type level and at the congressional delegation is the outsized influence of certain donors who have a different perspective on this, who demand that these people be brought in there. You have big labor always working. I'll give you an example. Idaho is one of those states where they're doing this. And Idaho is a state that you think of as a deep red state. It's turning blue because people are coming there from California. Now they're importing Mexicans to make Chobani yogurt. That's what I hear from people on the ground up there.
Money talks and BS walks.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But the problem is, what we have to remember is these people who get elected, by and large, are sociopaths who care much more about winning elections than
that's
they
right.
do about making policy. And if they can kick the can down the road and be the last one there, the Republican Party is like a frat party at this point where they're doing like a wake and bake, or they're just trying to keep just drunk enough to not have to have the hangover. And unfortunately, when we look at the meta trends in America, finances, our GDP is now less than our debt owed. The ideological problem, you know, the left and right going to war. You guys all know the issues in Virginia happening in other states, the issues we had in New York. You also know about the demographic changes. America as is unsustainable. And I can't tell you what's going to happen, but I can tell you that America in 2030 will look nothing like America in 2020. And, you know, what that works out to mean will depend entirely upon what the people of this country, or by then countries, are willing to contemplate.
Tom, as a guest goes, you're like a fine wine. I mean, we could have you on for an hour and feel as though it didn't even come close to being enough time.
We can do that,
with only seconds remaining, and I mean that. You're a fantastic guest and a fantastic commentator. With only seconds remaining, give us your contact information and then answer this question. Is there anything that could happen over the course of the next 4 years that won't render the Republican Party a regional party in 2024? Realistically happen. I mean, we know that there are things that could happen, but is Trump going to do anything? I mean, it doesn't look like he will.
I'll answer that first. My contact information, I'm at Tom Kaczynski on Twitter or Gab, and you can find, you know, just look a New Albion anywhere and you'll find me. Is there anything that could happen? Not this side of Operation Wetback, and I don't see that happening, so I'm going to say no.
That's it. That's a great answer. But look, that's a succinct answer, and it is the right answer, and we thought that Trump maybe possibly, if you looked at him through the right lens and the right, you know, glare, you know, could he do it in 2016? Maybe he might. He was an outsider. He was a renegade.
And now he's become, as Mark Levin said, our first Jewish president.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like he's going to do anything.
Second-term presidents can't accomplish anything because the party moves on. We need to also. Let's hope 2020 is great. God bless everyone.
God bless you.
Tom Kaczynski, what a great, wow, that was a powerful way to end the first, the second hour. Thank you, Tom. Tom Kaczynski, everybody. We'll be back in the third hour. Four more guests to go.
Success pool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.